for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. My name is Anna.
And I'm Sam.
And welcome to the middle of Rebels Season 3. We now give you a doubleheader that could have been a single episode. Ghosts of Geonosis!
Yeah, a little bit. Not a ton goes on in this one, but we are following up with, that was like the Season 3 opener with what was going on Geonosis, right?
Actually, it is a hollowback to my favorite Rebels episode, The Honorable Ones.
That's true.
Otherwise known as The Origin of Kalizeb.
So previously, they were like, what's going on with Geonosis? And it turns out that the rest of the Rebellion has been doing stuff this whole time.
Yeah. So in The Honorable Ones, when my secondary OTP gets stranded on the icy moons of Geonosis, the Rebels gather some intel about Geonosis being completely devoid of life, but also having weird energy readings. So we're finally following back up on that juicy piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is that the Rebels sent over Saw Gerrera and a whole team to investigate, and then they mysteriously disappeared, and the Spectres are being sent to investigate. So the Spectres head on over. They land on Geonosis. Kanan, Ezra, Rex, and Chopper head down into the spoopy underground tunnels to look for Saw and his team. And Sabine and Zeb go out into a literal sandstorm to figure out where the energy readings on the planet are coming from. They both find their answers. Saw's team was killed by a crew of Clone Wars-era battle droids. He is the only survivor. They discover this when Saw saves them from a second unit of battle droids. And then also out in the desert, there's a big old shield generator sending out those weird energy signals. And they determine that someone has been maintaining them.
And that shield generator is 100% lootable. Ah, yeah.
Ah, yeah. So we quickly find out that there has been one lonely bug, a Geonosian hiding down in the tunnels, who is in charge of all of this old Clone Wars tech. Sabine and Zeb want the shield generator, so they get it loose from the bigger array, and they are carefully guiding it back through the desert because they realize that they are completely surrounded by desert
Deserticas.
I was trying to come up with a cute name. As they're sneaking past it, the crew down in the tunnels startles the Geonosian, and he activates all of the destroyers, and they just start blasting. So Sabine and Zeb get the shield generator up. They are safe for the moment. It is rapidly running out of power.
They have a quarter second to spare. Sabine turns it on as a blaster is about to hit her in the head.
And the crew is like, we got to go after that bug to save our non-bug friends. So they have to cross this gaping underground chasm to get to the bug. Kanan does the coolest Jedi trick I've ever seen. He and Saw and Rex shoot down one of the sandstone bridges underneath the planet, and then he literally holds it up with sheer will and the force so that Saw and Rex can cross over. And then they basically run this bug down.
Mm-hmm.
Ezra taps into the force, sees where he is, grabs him, throws the remote to Chopper. Chopper blasts it just as the shield generator is failing. So Sabine and Zeb are safe. The bug is a hostage. And Saw Gerrera demands to know what the Geonosians were building for the Empire before they were mysteriously genocided. Da-da-da!
Da-da-da!
To be continued.
So we move into Ghost of Geonosis Part 2. Click-clack, the bug, draws a symbol in the sand, and no one knows what that means whatsoever. It is a small circle inside a larger circle. But they decide to ask for help and get, you know, get the whole crew together because this whole time they've had communication issues. Meanwhile, also, an Artaquin's light cruiser is in space and is like, behold, the ghost, let's bomb it. So they send down bombers and the ghost descends down this mine shaft that has these bridges across it, being chased by the Empire. So once they're rescued and aboard the ghost, Hera pulls Kanan aside and says, hey, like, we need to leave Click-Clack here. We've completed our mission. We've rescued Saw. We've figured out what we're doing.
Well, importantly, Click-Clack has the last Geonosian queen egg,
that's right,
which
yes.
is why he's here and picking people off one by one. It is to literally ensure the continuation of his species.
And so Click-Clack's sitting there. He's in handcuffs from Saw, and Saw is holding, like, a gun to him. And as Hera and Kanan step aside, and they're like, hey, so Saw Gerrera is, like, really fanatical about the rebellion. Saw holds his – he wrestles Rex out of this, and he's like, I'm taking the bug. I'm taking your shuttle. I need the answers on how to defeat the Empire. And eventually – Rex and Ezra talk him down from finishing off the genocide of the Geonosians.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's a real, it's pretty rough.
Amazing that we at one point were trying to root for this guy.
I know,
no right? longer.
So they descend all the way down to the bottom of this mine shaft. And there they find a whole bunch of Imperial canisters that were apparently full of genocide agent that killed all the Geonosians.
Genocide gas?
Yeah.
Oof. Jesus.
And that is finally what breaks Saw Gerrera's icy heart into a little peak of warmth. He's like, oh, it turns out that this Click-Clack character also hates the Empire for killing his people.
Well, yeah, the key to his cold, icy heart is that he's still mourning Steela Gerrera, which yeah. thank you, Rebels, for putting some respect on the superior Gerrera sibling's name. But he's mourning Steela, and he finally sees what the Empire has done to the Geonosians. And he's like, oh, wow, it turns out that the people on the other side of a war have families, too.
Yeah. And the ghost crew is like, yes, family, Saw Gerrera. We family, you crazy person. Click-Clack and the egg crawl even deeper into the tunnels, but the Empire is showing up. While they were descending, there was a great scene where a whole bunch of rocket troopers were chasing them down, and Sabine proceeds to kill 25 rocket troopers using a grenade and blasters and kicks.
Yes, Sabine.
But now the Artaquin's class cruiser is directly above them, and it's blasting the mineshaft into rubble so that the ghost will be crushed. So everybody boards the ship. And they start flying straight up.
Hera's like, thank you so much for artfully displaying yourself at the correct spot for me to completely annihilate you with proton bombs.
She's like, ah, the captain is showing their inexperience. Sabine, load the proton torpedoes. This ship is parked directly above them. And Hera's just like, I can cut through that. She, using proton torpedoes and lasers, she chops this ship in half and they fly off. And have a little bit of denouement as Bail Organa phones in and is like, hey, unfortunately, in that firefight, the canisters you tried to pick up, which are the actual physical evidence of genocide, fell off. So we can't bring this to the Senate to try to have the Empire deposed or whatever. But we do have enough to get a few more recruits. You rescued Saw Gerrera. You put a kink in the plans of the Empire. You figured out what was going on Geonosis. This is like a win for everyone involved. So great success.
Yeah, sort of a tepid win.
Yeah. I mean, the crew itself was like, we hate the way we won this. But Sato and Bail Organa are like, hey, you did good. Good job, guys. So that was Ghost of Geonosis.
Yeah. I'm sensing that you have mixed feelings about this arc. Would you like to speak on it?
So I want to talk about the real, real big picture, which is, well, first of all, Saw Gerrera is such a conflicted character.
Yeah, let's have a whole chapter on Saw.
Okay, but let's zoom up a little bit to talk about like the origins of Saw and what his deal is. So in 2005, George Lucas was putting together a project called Star Wars Underworld, and he's like, we're going to do 400 episodes, an hour each, of a live-action series in the underbelly of Coruscant.
What?
Yeah.
clearly that never panned out.
Clearly that never panned out. They had, like, the actors from the prequels and the original trilogy era, like, working together on this. And one of the characters they invented was Saw Gerrera. And Saw Gerrera played a role in The Clone Wars and then in Rogue One.
Wait. Okay, so after Revenge of the Sith came out, because that was 2005,
yep.
George Lucas was like, yo, we should do some live action stuff.
Yep.
It never panned out, and then they made The Clone Wars?
Then in 2008, they made The Clone Wars TV series.
Gotcha.
And they took a lot of the ideas, because the budget was too big. Like, asking someone even, and because this is before Disney started buying Lucasfilm. So Lucasfilm was like, we're going to do 100 episodes of a science fiction series. And everyone's like, how many billions of dollars do you have in 2005 money?
Yeah, for real.
And so it didn't pan out. They did The Clone Wars, which was much cheaper because it was animated.
Is that why we had so many detective film noir underbelly of Coruscant episodes?
Probably, because you may as well recycle however many scripts you wrote.
Fascinating.
So Saw Gerrera exists, is created, has his arc in The Clone Wars, and then in 2015, Rogue One comes out. Now, we haven't watched Rogue One for this podcast, but it's a pretty influential movie because it is sort of the first wave of a lot of new Star Wars stuff arriving, and it was absolutely critically loved. Everyone loved Rogue One.
But in our chronology, it hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet because it happens 4 minutes before episode four.
But as a fun fact, the in-universe, like, real-time chronology of the world is that these episodes, Ghosts of Geonosis, were the first two episodes of anything Star Wars to premiere after Rogue One.
Exactly.
Because they premiered on New Year's Day or whatever of
2016. Yeah, and Rogue One came out at the Christmas season of 2015.
Yes.
So in that, the role of Saw Gerrera is converted from movie into live action. He's revoiced and played by Forrest Whitaker. And then they got Forrest Whitaker to come in and do the voice for this episode as a younger Saw Gerrera.
So if Saw Gerrera is in Rogue One, then it probably would be pretty cool. On Christmas 2015, you go to theaters, you watch Rogue One, you're like, hey, Forrest Whitaker. And then you tune in to your friendly neighborhood Star Wars show 6 days later, and you're like, yo, Saw Gerrera.
Exactly.
Except diehard fans like us. I'm including me in this.
Well, I've seen that Saw Gerrera is an import from The Clone Wars, but, like, honestly, so many things are. I mean, Rex is, Ahsoka is, Maul is, all these other characters who we've brought in from the other, from Clone Wars into Rebels. So it's a nice threading of the thing.
The thing.
The thing. The whole thing. The whole the arc.
Threading of the tapestry that is Star Wars?
Sure, let's call it that. A threading of the big, enormous sweater that is Star Wars.
Love that so much. I want a Star Wars sweater. Why don't I have a Star Wars sweater?
They're hard to find. So here we are with Saw Gerrera in Rebels, and we get to see his fanaticism. And here's the other thing. Later on, during the pandemic, 5 years after this, is when Andor was filmed, and Saw Gerrera plays a role in Andor. And this is the same time period Saw Gerrera. And he's of this mind that he is the only one with clarity of purpose, that he is the only one with a true idea, and he truly does hate the Empire, and he doesn't like working with people, and that's the one we see here.
Well, kind of. So I have I shouldn't say I have issues with Saw Gerrera. I should say I continue to have issues with Saw Gerrera.
From the get-go, he's been such a troubled character.
From season four of The Clone Wars on Onderon, I have had beef with Saw Gerrera for a multitude of reasons. So if you would like to go to growingupskywalker.com and click on the tag Saw Gerrera, you can go back to the beginning of my big old beef Wellington with Saw Gerrera. Here's the thing. I'm a new fan. And I'm trying to do Star Wars right by watching in chronological, in-universe order. Mm-hmm. So I have seen Saw Gerrera from the get-go. And if Saw Gerrera wasn't named and called out every time we see him, I would not know it's the same character.
Oh, because his visuals change a lot.
He has had more haircuts and more eye color changes and more voice actor changes and more shifts in his fanaticism than should be allowed by a production crew. He is literally different every time he shows up, and it is so frustrating.
So his eye color changes. I mean, I don't think you can damn someone for changing their hair over time. That is one of the, skipping forward a bit to something we haven't watched yet. A bunch of people are like, oh, live action Sabine has long hair. It's like, yeah, it's 15 years later. People change their hairstyle.
Well, so the eye color thing annoys me because Steela and Saw Gerrera both have these beautiful piercing blue eyes in the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. Forrest Whitaker has brown eyes. Whatever. Yeah. I don't care. When we see him in Andor, that's fine. I can make the leap from animation to live action. But then when you show Saw Gerrera in Rebels holding up a holocron of his beloved sister Steela, and she has piercing blue eyes and he has green eyes.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Why are his eyes changing over time?
Right.
Exposure to chemicals.
And he was in the Bad Batch too.
He was in the Bad Batch.
And had a completely different look there as well. So if I weren't applying deep, studious attention to all of Star Wars that I watch, I would be lost.
Interesting.
It's a disservice and it comes off as lazy.
Okay. I definitely don't grab that as much because I do figure that especially someone who's been through the ringer and living in caves and like presumably surviving off of vermin cooked over explosives is the kind of person who like is exposed to bad chemicals and is going to grow and change and might undergo like eye color changes or their hair falls out or things like that. Like that could happen.
Wibbly wobbly hand wavy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there exists some plant or animal which you can eat in the Star Wars universe, which will change your eye color. I think that it shows perhaps a change in character as well, that the original Saw Gerrera from the Clone Wars was hard edge, was very much someone who really wanted to stick it to the Separatists. And we see that in this Saw Gerrera as well, because this Saw Gerrera in Rebels is like, I hate all Separatists, including this Geonosian, who's presumably like a baby. Like, this is a 5-year-old genus.
Yeah, we can talk about click-clack in a minute.
And, like, I hate Separatists. And then, like, the rest of the Ghost crew is like, hey, man, we've all, like, pretty much changed sides a couple times in this war. Like, this is not – like, we're fighting the Empire now, and the Geonosians are on our side now because the Empire genocided them. And that's finally what got Saw Gerrera to change his mind. And it seems like he's become more and more stubborn over time and hard to change his mind. And I think that's what like Luthen had to deal with, was the only way to actually get Saw Gerrera to change his mind is genuinely to put a gun to his head.
I guess that's another reason why Saw's character was ringing so false for me. Because this Saw Gerrera feels like a direct porting over from the Clone Wars. But we've seen Saw Gerrera in the intermediary in Andor and in the Bad Batch. So, okay, let me try to vocalize what I'm saying. This iteration of Saw Gerrera feels like a copy-paste, except for the eye color and the hair from the Clone Wars. And then the Bad Batch Saw Gerrera feels like a copy-paste into the Andor Saw Gerrera.
Okay.
It's like we have two different threads, and no one is doing Saw Gerrera correctly across his entire 5-plus show appearance.
See, I think the problem is that Saw Gerrera is living backwards.
Like he's regressing?
No. That like – the character in Universe Prime, the character appears in Clone Wars, then Rogue One, then Rebels, then Andor, then Bad Batch.
Which is a mess.
Which is like the inverse chronological order. They basically appear in reverse chronological order, except for an early Clone Wars
appearance. Right. So if you know you're doing that, you have to be extra careful to build in a continuity that makes sense for people who are watching Star Wars in the order in which it happens.
Well, I think perhaps that also shows something, which is that he is a fanatic. And his emotional tenor, his fanaticism, is something which is actually alien to those of us who are, like, rational, fed people not engaged in a war against our government. Because Saw Gerrera is 100% a nut job.
Yeah.
He's Osama bin Laden and the Unabomber rolled into one. And so he's like a killer. He is a mass murderer. He is a terrorist. He is a good guy. He's a rough good guy to have on your side.
In the spirit of the generous read of the text, which we apply on Growing Up Skywalker, I will accept this generous read. And I will say this is supported by the text, by the fact that no one likes Saw Gerrera and everyone feels deeply uneasy when he's around.
Even Rex, who's like, I've known this guy for 20 years. And when we're in the same room, I stand with my back to the wall. And I'm Rex.
Me and Saw Gerrera, we go way back. So I give him a handshake and then I cross the room.
Yeah, then I'm like, okay, cool, nice to see you.
Yeah, so Saw Gerrera is a pariah. He is an unpleasant person. Mm-hmm. He is the kind of person you have to threaten at gunpoint to do what you want him to do. And you have to reason with him to not exterminate an entire species. Mm-hmm. Because that is not his knee-jerk reaction.
And he's also Luthen's extremely sharp instrument.
Is he a sharp instrument or a blunt instrument?
He is a don't leave a lot of evidence. This is definitely a murder, not an accident. Like, he is Luthen's weapon of choice for deleting something. And he also lets Saw Gerrera run free and, like, forage for himself and do all these things. So that's why at the end of this, like, Hera and Saw recognize each other as equals in terms of, like, their capacity to inflict violence. Although Saw does it at, like, this different level. And I think that's what it comes down to, like, what we see in this episode is that Hera basically works for Bail Organa and Saw works for Luthen. And Luthen's mind is a sunless space, and Bail Organa is actually a really nice guy. So,
yeah, one of my interesting questions this episode was whether or not we can really consider Saw to be a rebel.
Oh, good question.
A capital R rebel versus a lowercase r rebel. So we do finally get a stated reason for why Saw is the way he is. He has this beautiful short monologue where he says, I lost my sister Stila to the Separatists. I lost my planet to the Empire. I am fighting for you, the Spectres, and everyone else to not lose what they've got, and I won't apologize for how I do it.
Yeah.
So if that is his manifesto, he is following a capital R rebel ideology.
Yeah.
But he often seems in opposition to capital R, capital C, rebel command.
Well, because he's also an anarchist. And
right.
Like, the entire concept of a rebel command is anathema to him. But that's also because he's the big man in charge for his crew.
Right.
So he exists in this space of ideological purity without political understanding.
Or he doesn't care about politics.
Yeah, well, he doesn't understand that he's getting his, like, I'm sure that Luthen has 5 different cutouts that feed Saw Gerrera enough to keep him fed. Luthen's probably got, like, oh, I need to, like, actually get this Imperial person in touch with this Imperial person so that they're in a zone where I know pirates will be that Saw Gerrera will kill later. That's the type of move Luthen pulls off just to make sure that Saw Gerrera stays fed and hungry and angry. And Saw doesn't think he's getting jerked around, but he actually is. Mm. Like, everyone sees him as a bull in the china shop who loves being in the china shop. And what Luthen and presumably, like, Thrawn or someone of that ilk in the Empire are doing is like, oh, well, then we will set up a little pathway through the mall of china shops so we can get this bull to be where we want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's the game Luthen's playing. That's the game that Thrawn is attempting to play with Hera.
Mm.
Because they're honestly of like a similar caliber as far as what they're doing. That's like what Thrawn's stated intent to do with the Phoenix Cell and with Hera is like, I need to set up all these things that only the Phoenix Cell, that the rebels will fall into as a trap. And I'm going to keep letting them get away with it so they can keep getting bigger and bigger so I can get them all to think in the way I want them to. It's not like a way I agree with. It's just a way that I can control.
Yeah. So, and we can close our discussion of Saw for now, but maybe one of the strengths of Saw's character and the reason why he creates so much pushback in me is that he is a deliberately polarizing figure and he inhabits so many different contradictions. Like, he is powerful and easily manipulated. And he is a firebrand and a rebel, but not necessarily a perfect rebel.
Mm-hmm.
He is controlled and also uncontrollable.
Well, to go back to your thought line about capital R rebel versus small case rebel, I think that he's the only one. I mean, he's said this in Andor. He's the only one who believes that he is the actual rebel. And everyone else is like lacking that purity of purpose.
Right.
And so his impact as he moves through the galaxy is one in a state of open rebellion. And it, you know, if you, as he does, consider ruthlessness to be a bridge he's already crossed because the Empire's already crossed it, then he obviously doesn't actually put any stock in the Phoenix Cell.
Maybe. Or maybe he thinks that because they answer to a rebel command, they are just simply milquetoast. They are not as principled as him. Because he sees himself as being in service of a rebellion, but not necessarily the rebellion.
Yeah, well, he's not a joiner, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not a joiner. And maybe he's complicating our ideas that unity will win the game.
Yes, and he's doing that by succeeding, right? If his idea of rebellion was, as he described Anto Krieger, an ox who just like went in, caused problems, and died, then it'd be like, okay, cool. Or Mart and the Iron Squadron, who are just like, oh, we're going to go in and cause problems, and then are going to die unless they join up, then you're left with, okay, there's sort of open rebellion all the time, and that's just whatever. That's functionally piracy. It's when you get it organized that it becomes clear. The fact that Saw Gerrera is surviving and thriving without being really connected with a greater rebellion network shows that the ideological purity of the rebellion is fallible.
Hmm.
Because there can exist success outside of it.
Interesting.
Sorry, that took a long time to get there.
No, but I'm picking up what you're putting down. You're saying that the capital R rebels are succeeding, but the fact that Saw Gerrera is thriving in an anarchic state, mm-hmm. helping out where he feels like it and doing his own missions where he feels like it, means that rebel command is not perfect.
So George Orwell wrote a book called Dispatches from Catalonia because he famously fought for the socialists in the Spanish Civil War. And there's scenes where, like, I think it was Barcelona, all these different buildings, each one is like a fortress for a different faction of the leftist infighters. And they're all sitting there and they take pot shots at each other until the fascists show up, and then they all join up to fight off the fascists. But this idea of they're wrong and we won't fight them and they're wrong because, and then at the end of it, like the Stalinist communists came in and took over everything and started doing like their own version of ideological purity. That is what Saw Gerrera is afraid of, is I'm a successful rebel. I want the representation. And the only way I can be represented is to have no shackles whatsoever, because he's a fundamentally emotionally damaged person because he lost his sister and she was his only tie to politeness or, you know, the larger strategic sense.
Well, he lost his sister and he lost his war.
Yeah. So he's lost so many wars.
Yeah.
He's lost every war he's fought in, you know? He's down to not much.
Oof.
Yeah. But he keeps fighting. And that is in itself like the cheerleader of what you need the rebels to be. It's all fine and dandy when you're a bunch of teenagers riding around on the Ghost with good food and warm beds and you're still fighting. But when you're still fighting and you're Saw Gerrera and you've lost half your men today, you're going to lose the other half tomorrow. You live in a cave and Luthen's hassling you all the time. Like, yeah, this is a tough life. And Saw still does it.
On that note, maybe we should talk about the character responsible for killing all of Saw Gerrera's men this arc. Click Clack.
The last Geonosian.
Yeah, well, at least the second to last.
It depends on how many Geonosian eggs count as a full Geonosian, you know.
But this
yeah,
right.
So Click Clack is the last survivor, not winged, very small, surprisingly had teeth. Didn't recall them having teeth.
Yeah, Click Clack. So because we're talking all about the Clone Wars this arc, because this is a massive Clone Wars callback, Click Clack felt like almost undoing some reputational damage from the Clone Wars, where the Geonosians were depicted as either horrifying 50-foot tall queen larva producers, like Queen Karina, or the Geonosians from the second season of the Clone Wars and from Attack of the Clones, which are sentient but
alien,
essentially cloned, mindless warriors,
drones.
Thank you. Yeah. That was the word I was looking for. But Click Clack has these big, beautiful, expressive eyes. He doesn't have any of the armor-plated scales that the warrior Geonosians has.
It's also small. He's like Ezra-sized.
Small. He's making these pitiful whimpers the entire arc. He's very clearly, to me, meant to be a sympathetic character and a different and more individualized example of a Geonosian, which we've never seen before.
Yeah, that's true. The backstory for the Geonosians is crazy. We've talked on it a little bit about how Poggle the Lesser is famously someone who fought in the arena versus all those monsters in order to become the Duke of all of Geonosis, despite being from the lesser caste. And so he held on to the title of the Lesser his entire life to just stick it in everyone's membranes or whatever.
Fascinating. Long and we ports. See him in the Clone Wars.
Yes, we do. We see Poggle the Lesser. We see Poggle the Lesser in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And we also got to see Poggle the Lesser because he was delivering a data disc containing a big circle with a small circle on it to Count Dooku in Attack of the Clones.
Clearly not a very sympathetic character. Unlike Click Clack.
Yeah, so Click Clack definitely puts off the civilian vibes to me, especially being without wings. So that means that this is just like a different type of species. So if you imagine like ants, like only the male ants have wings and most of them are females. So maybe that is what they were trying to get with the Geonosians, is like either sexual or caste dimorphism.
Interesting.
Trimorphism, bugmorphism.
Yeah, so I was thinking about Click Clack, and I was thinking about what code of ethics we apply in this scenario. So, Saw Gerrera loses all of his men because Click Clack kills them.
Yeah.
On the flip side, Click Clack is trying to defend an entire species from violent interlopers. So, what code of ethics do we apply to a character who's trying to save their race?
That's a great question. And it's explored in the episode because Ezra and Rex and Kanan are like, yo, we like showed up and Rex is still wearing, like, he's still got, I went to the second battle of Geonosis and all I got was this stupid helmet. And like, they show up and then they're like, oh yeah, Click Clack was literally just defending their home. Like, he's just sitting here defending his home from invaders, and we shouldn't really take that as an act of aggression. So what code of ethics do we apply to Click Clack for defending themselves or for building this mega circle?
Here's what I was thinking. When Saw Gerrera in season 4 of The Clone Wars is defending Onderon from the Separatists, we say Saw Gerrera is righteous. He should fight off the interlopers. When people invade Geonosis in season 2 of The Clone Wars, we say, ah, yes, defeat the nasty bugs. They are against us. When Saw Gerrera goes down into the tunnels of Geonosis in this episode of Rebels and wants to exterminate the Geonosians, we say, ah, yes, Click Clack was justified in fighting off Saw Gerrera, even if it means killing his men. When Saw Gerrera tries to defend the galaxy from the Empire, which would exterminate him and every rebel, we feel complicated. So I'm trying to figure out the different moral codes we're applying to everybody.
So I'm going to tap Vonnegut for this one. Yeah, I know, right? So Vonnegut was a bomber pilot during World War II, and there was the strategic bombing raids. So every day, bombers flew over Germany and bombed factories and cities, and they firebombed them and, you know, destroyed entire cities and reduced the German, like, cities to rubble in order to shorten the war, in order to prevent the Nazis from making tanks and taking out the Soviet Union.
So the ends justify the means.
Well, it kind of depends. At a certain level, when you go to an enemy's industrial or political or civilizational center and persecute a war there in order to win the war, you've exhibited what was called at the time during the Civil War, when Sherman did it, was total war. Because Sherman did that too. He did Plan Anaconda, and he's like, I'm going to march to Atlanta and burn it down because that cuts the Confederacy in half. And then they can't continue to persecute this war, and we end it 2 years faster.
As someone from Atlanta, I have complicated feelings about that, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, it worked. So
it would be nice to have historic buildings, but okay, go off.
It worked. And so, like, that is the calculus of war. And at the end of, in 1945, all of the Strategic Air Command people are sitting together and be like, man, if we lose this war, if we had lost this war, we would be war criminals. Because we ordered Hiroshima and Nagasaki and Dresden and other bombings over and over again. People don't send their own successful generals to the firing squad for following orders. And so if the orders succeed, all is forgiven. And I think that also goes back to Saw of, like, Mon Mothma and Luthen and Bail Organa are sitting there being like, hey, if he wins, we have to forgive him for all these crimes he's going to commit. And so that moral line is the line of when you're persecuting a war. And ironically, let's go back to Yoda on the temple on Lothal when he's talking to Ezra and says, if you've fought, you've already lost. Because it's the act of fighting that makes you have to make these complex things. And once you begin fighting whatsoever, you have already entered into the dark side one way or the other. You are already living and acting out of fear.
So everyone can be implicated because they have been fighting. So Click Clack can be implicated, Saw can be implicated, the rebels can be implicated, and the Empire can be implicated, which I think calls back to one of the major sticking points in Andor. It goes back to Luthen's speech. He has been responsible for the rebellion committing atrocities near the same level as the Empire to win and hopefully commit fewer atrocities than the Empire would overall in the future.
I am going to give Click Clack a pass because those are home defense droidicas. And
that's his alarm system. That's his alarm on his house.
And also, like, I'm just kind of assuming that Click Clack is like Ezra's age, which means after the Clone Wars.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's my assumption. So blameless in that capacity, although the Geonosians were creating, let's call it what it is, the Death Star. So
is that the circle within the circle?
That is the plan that Poggle sends to Dooku. That is what Click Clack is trying to show them, and they are not perceiving that the Death Star was created in orbit around Geonosis and has since been moved.
Yeah.
And as a result of it moving, the Empire bombed Geonosis until there was only one survivor.
So the Empire is still the big bad. I think moral quibbling included. The Empire is still the biggest bad.
The Empire doesn't ask these questions, right? And that's how you know that you're still on the side of good, is if you're like, have we gone too far?
Mm.
Because if the answer is no, you fool, we can always go further, let's go further, then you're the baddies. Like in The Inside Man, when Thrawn and Price are like, yeah, get that old man on that bike and make it explode. And Kallus and Leist are like, yo, that was gross. Like, that's what converts them.
I think that's the answer.
Yeah. If you still exhibit, if you're still feeling the moral quandary, then it is still a tough thing for you.
Mm-hmm. And that's what our rebels, that's what the Spectres end up deciding about Saw. He was able to empathize with Click Clack and the Geonosians because they have families and he has a family,
mm-hmm.
and he decided not to kill their entire species. And they say, okay, Saw Gerrera is potentially redeemable.
Mm-hmm.
He can still be a rebel.
Did not commit xenocide. Yeah.
Did not commit xenocide today. Still a rebel.
I was actually looking that up because I remembered Ender's Game. And at the end of Ender's Game, Ender actually saves a bug queen egg and moves it to another planet. And that's what the next however many books he wrote, 18 books, are somewhat about that.
Good literary references today.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that is those came out in the 80s and early 90s. So they definitely informed the Geonosians, especially because the Formics in Ender's Game are like, oh, they build a bunch of ships and they have a bug queen. And if you kill the bug queen, then they stop operating. It's like, okay, that's definitely the Phantom Menace when the droids all shut down once their ship shuts down. And that's definitely in Babylon 5, and it's definitely here. So it was generously taken from the Ender's Game story. And the later books deal with this exact same thing, particularly because that's like fundamentally the plot of Ender's Game is like, if you take the most brilliant 8-year-old and turn them into a warrior, are you still creating child soldiers? The answer is like, duh, yes. But this idea of the ethics of war being the fundamental question is also something we're exploring here. And it's interesting that Saw Gerrera always manages to live and be wrong and be right.
Hmm. That's funny. My frame of reference for the Geonosians has always been Starship Troopers, which is a much less rarefied literary reference than Ender's Game.
The movie or the book?
The movie.
Okay. Because the movie is a parody of the book.
I know, Sam. I know I have trash taste in literature. It's fine.
No. Like, that's not – I mean, I just think it's important to note that Starship Troopers, the movie, is a parody of Starship Troopers, the book, because Starship Troopers, the book – actually also explores this in the capacity of are you a citizen if you are not a warrior? And in a way, that is the fascism which the Empire follows as well, in that every single person in the Empire is fighting for the Imperial war machine in one capacity or the other. There's no civilians within the Empire. Everyone is part of it. And that's something also explored. It's just that in Starship Troopers, we are the baddies.
Aren't we always the baddies?
Not if we're always trying. Not if we're always trying to do better. That's the only thing we can do.
final thoughts, a couple random pieces. When Bail phones in the beginning, and we've touched on this briefly, he talks about Rebel Command like it is an established body.
Mm.
Do we know, beyond Bail and, I guess, Commander Sato, who is Rebel Command? Is it Luthen?
Good question. There are multiple cells. I imagine that there are multiple Fulcrum-esque entities. There are multiple Sato-level entities. And then each Fulcrum is parallel to a Sato, and each Sato has probably a couple of Heras or Saws that work for them.
But the way that Bail describes it is as if he's part of an overarching Rebel Command in charge of all of the different cells.
Yeah, I don't think that it makes sense for that to even exist, even at this point in time. Because recall that in Fire Across the Galaxy at the end of Season 1, and there's finally this call to action, and in Narkeena 5, there's this call to action, and Marva's call to action. We still don't have, go down to your local rebel recruiting office and join up with the rebellion. You still have to know someone who knows someone. You still have to be on the fringes of society to do this.
Well, but that is the grassroots recruitment piece. That's not the overarching command structure piece.
So do you think that Mon Mothma and Luthen and Bail Organa are all meeting there on Coruscant while being deeply spied on to make these decisions, or do you think it's more of a mid-level decision-making?
Well, that's why I'm asking. Yeah. I mean, Mon Mothma at this point is just a funder. She's just attempting to bankroll the rebellion. It doesn't seem to me like bankrolling the rebellion would buy her a seat on the command structure. It seems to me like Bail is referring to a very small, highly classified couple of people that are meeting in secret to determine the larger path.
Yeah, I buy that. I think that the rebellion is still in a state of they are fighting. They don't know what they're fighting yet. They don't know about the Death Star. And so they're fighting, they're doing all sorts of anti-imperial activity. I think it's a decentralized war, and that means that they don't have a large strategic initiative. What they do have is a wider and faster understanding of intelligence. And that is what Hera and Sato's job has been for the past three seasons, has been an expanding of what missions are available to the rebels and what the Ghost is capable of going out and doing. But they do get asked to perform tasks now and again, but they probably could have turned down this mission to go after Saw. It's just because Bail was this is important to other cells. They report that to me. I'm asking Sato to ask you to go check out what Saw's up to.
So maybe Bail is Rebel Command.
Maybe he is, or he gets a message from Mon Mothma sent by Luthen, because Luthen's hey, Saw's gone missing. He was asked on this mission. Please ask someone else, and please tell Bail Organa that the bird has flown the coop. Bail Organa will know what that means. I just don't have a way. I don't know who to get in touch with in Bail Organa's command structure, because we are all in rebel cells and we don't know who's who.
So I think this points to the larger question that we've been attempting to ask all episode, which is we're trying to get our arms around how big, centralized, and uniform the rebellion is compared to the Empire. And it seems like the answer is not very.
Yep. I mean, they all have matching hats. That's about it.
That's about it. Well, the logo makes the brand, as they say.
Exactly. And that has, in fact, always been one of the hallmarks of rebellion. During the Russian Civil War in 1918 to 1922-ish, depending on how you count, the Soviets, I don't even know if they were Soviets at the time, would wrap a red bandana around their rifles. And they had, 20 different kinds of rifles. They came from every which way. They probably spoke different languages, but they were all unified in one way. And so, yeah, the hats do make the language. If you pick up a rebel hat, you are now a rebel. Them's the rules.
Them's the rules.
Yeah.
Is it time for our most rule-less segment of Growing Up Skywalker, Baywatch.
How is this rule-less? We have the most rules for Baywatch.
The rules are don't pick Palpatine.
I've picked Palpatine.
And yes, pick based on vibes only.
Vibes only. All right, let's do it. It's time for
Baywatch.
Ghosts of Baywatch.
Ghosts of Baywatch past.
All right, well, the rules of Baywatch are whoever calls in after the break is the one who doesn't have to choose first. So go ahead and choose.
I really wanted to pick Hera because I think she's great, but I'm actually going to go with Kanan.
Good choice.
Both good choices?
Both good choices.
We didn't talk about Kanan in the main body of the episode, but I'm really appreciating this grown-up, steady Kanan. I love how he keeps making the sensible call down in the tunnels. He's like, okay, guys, we're on our own. We're away from the team. We cannot get in touch with them. Something or someone is actively trying to sabotage us. We should go back to the ghost. And when Rex and Ezra outvote him time and time again, he's like, okay, I don't feel good about this. I'm going to watch your back even more carefully. But I'm going to be flexible and accept what comes our way.
Yeah.
Which is such a beautifully Jedi way to be.
He also exhibits a huge amount of strength as a Jedi. That jump he made is huge. That's the entire length of the ghost, as well as when he held up the bridge. That was a really, like, that's a big bridge. As far as the things we've seen Jedi lift, it seems big.
That was very handsome of him. And just, I love how, because he's so newly attuned to the Force, he sees more clearly than the characters who have sight. Everyone's always asking him, Kanan, what are you sensing? Where is Click Clack? What's going on? He is more attuned to his surroundings than anybody is who has sight.
Yeah, he's definitely the one who sees Click Clack first and is always like, even very early on, as soon as they meet Click Clack, like he perceives Click Clack and then he's like, hey, we found Sagara, it's time to bounce. Like, oh no, I think we should continue on. He's like, I think we should bounce because we've completed our mission and there's someone over there who is very much putting off a no trespassing vibe. So yeah, Kanan's a great choice.
Who did you pick?
I'm picking Hera.
Yay! Okay, good, 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 good.
This captain is showing their inexperience. Get wrecked, noob. I'm going to, Sabine, load proton torpedoes. I'm going to cut our way out using explosives. Also, like, she is managing the whole situation and, like, yelling at people, but she's also making all these snap decisions. She's a good general.
She's in full-on mom general mode.
Yeah.
General mom.
Yeah.
She is general mom. She does not have a single speaking line this episode that isn't yelling.
This is true. And, you know, she lands the ghost perfectly, despite the fact she can see 2.5 inches in front of her in that dust storm. And it's just, it's good. It's good stuff. It shows the all the best parts of Hera, the season one Hera, who always knows a little bit more than she's letting on. And then the season two and three Hera, who's just like, you would not, but like, I stopped painting TIE fighters on the side of this thing when I started destroying light cruisers. Like, she's pretty scary.
She's super scary. She's also compassionate. She, as soon as she meets Click Clack, says to everybody, we need to let this bug go.
Exactly. So despite the fact that she is persecuting this war and just sent, you know, 120 Imperial officers to their deaths, she is still caring deeply about the effects of the war, which, and you know, makes her a good guy in this capacity.
Yeah. She's very effortlessly on the right side. This episode, she sees very clearly, yes, we should kill these Imperials. They're trying to kill us. No, we should not kill this bug. For any reason.
Yeah.
Is he trying to kill us? No. Okay, we should not try to kill him.
Yeah.
She makes the moral calculus of war very simple.
Yeah. Yeah. So, definitely. Just I just love the idea of an Imperial captain. He's like, I have them right where I want them. How is this ship so well known to the Empire? Surely they've, you know, it's just a VCX-100, and then she chops it in half. That's why.
Just the way that that Imperial general, like, clenches her fist and goes, curses! My promotion!
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, delightful.
She's going to end up like, what's his name? Was it Admiral Titus? Yeah, just demoted down to manure shoveler.
It's what she deserves.
Yeah. All right. Well, next week we are watching 14 and 15 of season 3, Warhead and Trials of the Darksaber.
Feels like our Geonosis chapter is over.
Feels like it. Click Clack has scuttled down to the planetary core where they'll be safe from rampaging Saw Gerreras. So, yeah.
Sounds like maybe we're headed back to Mandalore?
Maybe.
I like Mandalore.
Yeah, that's what Warhead means to me, too.
Oh. Well, if you love Growing Up Skywalker, make sure to leave us a love note on your podcast platform of choice. It really helps us out if you drop us 5 stars and leave us a review and answer the little questions that we leave you on Spotify and all of that jazz. So we appreciate that. Thank you very much. You can also find us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Twitter.
And you can, if you want more Skywalker, join us on Patreon. We are just finishing up with Visions Season 2, and then we're going to do a book report, and then we're going to figure out what we're going to do next. So Visions Season 2 was a ton of fun and really insightful. We got a lot out of it. So join us there if you want to hear our talks on all the non-canon stuff or books. This is actually a canon book we'll be reading. So yeah, fun stuff there. We put out a ton of content and it starts at just $3 a month.
And send this episode to someone who slices through the moral calculus of complicated issues.
Or light cruisers.
Yeah, that too.
And we'll catch you next time.
Talk to you next Tuesday.